Well, they got them in a vending machine.
Good evening, everyone. The Ways and Means meeting will come to order. There is a quorum. Members, we don't have any minutes to approve since it's our first meeting of the year, but a couple things I'd like to do before we take up our main business tonight. I'd call your attention to a copy of the rules that are in the packets. I guess I'd like people to take a look at these. If you have any suggested changes, they're what we had last year by and large. Feel free to get a hold of me in the next day or two, and I'll go ahead and issue them. Also in the packet, there is a report and a letter from the Office of Management and the Budget, which is new. This is something that kind of comes with the forecast a couple weeks after each forecast now that passed as part of the supplemental budget last year. And it's language that talks about, what the state economists would call forecast error or historic variance in the budget forecast. You know, when you look at what our projected budget surplus is, I think all of us know that what that final number might be will change as we've got changes in the economy and so forth over the next couple of years. This provides some information on historically how much that might change. And we'll have a hearing on that sometime, but since this was made available to me as for the November forecast, I thought I should go ahead and bring it to your attention. I'd also like to, at this point, take the time to just go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves. Most of the members are new or are the same, but we have some new members and staff, and so I'd like to do that. But Representative Carlson,
your input on the rules, Mr. Chairman, and I was just going to comment about rule number two.
Thank you.
You know, we meet in the morning sometimes, and I'm a big coffee drinker, and sometimes I get up and I just go right around the corner. So under your rules, I'd be checking in with the clerk every time I go to the bathroom.
All right. Well,
either that or I quit drinking coffee, but I'm just pointing out that that's...
All right. Okay, well, I am looking for input on the rules,
you might think
and I'll
about that
take that
bit.
Under advisement and see if there's a way I can maybe...
You know, as a retired teacher, I used to have to write the pink pass every time a kid had to go to the bathroom, but I don't know if we want to get to that level.
All right, well, we'll take that under advisement and see if we can figure out some better wording. So other people have suggestions. That's why I'm passing them out as opposed to just publishing them. Please send me or Mr. Stone, our committee administrator, an email, and we'll consider all suggestions. With that, if we can just go around the room quick with introductions, and I think maybe just give us your name, what area you represent, and maybe if you have been a chair in the past, what committees you've chaired or other particular legislative interests you have or anything else you want to tell us about yourself. My name is Jim Knobloch. I'm from the St. Cloud area. First elected in 1994, was gone for 8 years from 2007 to 14, elected again in 2014. I chaired the Ways and Means Committee, as I think probably all of you know, the last 2 years, also from 4 years from 2003 to 6, and chaired capital investment for 4 years before that. And why don't I start out going this way? Craig?
Craig Stone, Committee Administrator.
Bill Marks, Fiscal Staff. Colby Sullivan, House Research Department.
Steve Draskowski, represent Northern Winona, Southern Wabasha, Southern Goodhue, a portion of Dodge County. Been in the legislature for 9 years, and I'm Chair of the Property Tax Committee.
I'm Matt Dean from District 38B, Akaroflo.
Paul Torkelson, 16B, current transportation chair, former bonding chair.
New guy to the committee, Dave Baker, District 17B, Wilmer, Candiota County. Never have been a chairman, and I'm lucky to be here today, so thank you.
Sarah Anderson, represent Plymouth, and Dave lives in my hometown area.
Boom.
Representative Bud Hornes, I live in Fergus Falls, represent about half of Watertail County, and I chair higher education.
Tony Cornish, I live in Good Thunder, Minnesota, and chair of the Public Safety and Security Committee.
Rod Hamilton, District 22B, I live in Mountain Lake, Minnesota, and I chair the Agriculture Finance Committee.
Bob Gunther, District 23A, Martin, Wattenwan, Jackson, in Faribault County. I chaired Jobs, and I chair the Legacy Committee.
Greg Davids, District 20B, Chair of the Tax Committee.
Dan Fabian, I live in Roseau, Minnesota. I represent Roseau, Kitson, Marshall, part of Pennington County, 360 miles from the capital. Ice fishing is great. Snowmobile trails are groomed. Come on up to northern Minnesota.
Jennifer Loon from Eden Prairie, Minnesota, District 48B, Chair of the Education Finance Committee.
And Bob Detmer from Forest Lake, Minnesota, 39A, and I chair the Veterans Affairs Division.
Dean Erdahl from 18A, which is Meeker County, three townships in McLeod County, one township in Wright County, and I chair the Bonding Committee.
Go ahead, Annie.
My name is Annie Pericini. I supervise the GOP Legislative Assistant Staff, and you guys have a new CLA with you, so we're doing a little training today. So I'm your guest CLA for just today.
I'm Jean Paddington, and I'm the Committee Legislative Assistant. I'll bring my
Bob Vogel. I live in Elko Newmarket, and I have Southern Scott and Western Lee Sore counties in the district, and this is my second term, so I'm new to the committee.
And the Vice Chair of the Committee.
And the Vice Chair of the Committee.
Hi. Good evening, Mr. Chairman. I'm Frank Hornstein. I represent parts of downtown and southwest Minneapolis, first elected in 2002. I chaired the Transportation Finance Committee at one time, and now I'm the DFL lead on Transportation Finance.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tina Liebling from Rochester.
I'm Erin Murphy. New to this committee, I represent a district in St. Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Paul Marquardt, represent District 4B, which is all or parts of Norman, Clay, and Becker County.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'm Lyndon Carlson, and when you asked us to identify our communities, that was easy. That's New Hope, Plymouth, and Crystal. I have parts of those three cities in the northwest suburbs, if you don't know the metro area. But the second part of your question was a little bit more complicated. What
could take a while in your case.
What committees? Well, you know, Representative Erdahl one time in committee said, are there any committees you've never served on? And I had to think about that, but I'd never served on agriculture. But at any rate, early in my career, I chaired the Model Health Committee, they called that. That was the title of the committee. And then I served as chair of the Education Division of Appropriations for many years, then the Education Committee. Then in more recent years, when Margaret Anderson Kelleher was Speaker, I chaired the Finance Committee, and more recently the Ways and Means Committee, so I would be your immediate past predecessor, you know, and in that regard, and now I serve as the lead on the committee for the DFL, for the DFL, and then I was elected in 1972.
Thank you.
I'm Deborah Hillstrom. I represent all the City of Brooklyn Center and parts of Brooklyn Park. I previously have chaired Local Government Committee as well as Public Safety, and now I'm the DFL lead in the area of Public Safety.
Jean Poppy. I represent District 27B, live in Austin, Minnesota. It's along the Iowa border.
Jean Pulowski, Southern Winona County.
Jean Wagenius. I served as rep for very southern part of Minneapolis in the center, parts of Richfield, and I have chaired Environment Finance Committees.
And if we could have the GOP House Research and DFL House Research and our page introduce themselves. Who wants to go first?
David Sullivan with DFL Research.
Okay.
Phil Glahn, Republican Research.
Ryan and Paige.
All right. All right. Well, thanks. Well, we look forward to working with all the staff who I know are always so helpful to us, and I look forward to a good, productive working committee with all of you. With that, let's turn to our agenda item for the night, if Representative Hoppe would come forward. And welcome to the committee, Representative Hoppe. The chair will move that House File 1 be referred to the General Register. Representative Hoppe, could you present the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I know you asked me to come up here, but Commissioner Franz came up with, we're kind of getting used to being together on this. And
That's okay.
Yeah. And
I know we'll hear from him later.
And I know we'll talk a lot about the bill, and we all know what the bill is and why it's here. We're a group of us started working, for those that haven't heard this yet. We think it was the middle of October, and it was, you know, we didn't know what would happen in the election. It was a bipartisan group, senators, representatives, Democrats, Republicans, a lot of our staff who have really put the most work in on this, and members of the administration. And we were, at the time, we were working try to come up with some sort of a solution and hoping that we could get something affected for a special session so that we could get some help, some premium relief early on, so that people that were looking to pick a health insurance plan, whether it was through Minsure or not, would have some idea of some assistance that was coming. And as we all know, we didn't have a special session. So we're now in House File 1. We're looking at doing some reform. We're looking at some money. And the commissioner and I, the governor's plan and the House plan differ in how we would get the money to people. But we're looking to do some premium relief for people. And then I think we all agree to one extent or another that we need to have some reform for, to any extent we can, to still impact 2017, but really for 2018 and on into the future. And we just disagree about exactly what those reforms will be and how soon we're going to get into the reforms, whether it's going to be in House File.
Is there anyone that has a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Representative Liebling, let us get the rebuttal to the plan.
Okay, Mr. Chair, should I talk even though we're still in the dark here?
Yep, we're, go. We're not okay. Completely in the dark.
Okay. Not completely, the light is dawning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner. So there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that the governor's bill draws the money from the Healthcare Access Fund, and then the House File 1 that's before the committee draws the money from the budget reserve. Could you just talk to us a little bit about that decision and how, you know, and what I'm, oh, good, the light's coming back on. What I'm specifically interested in is whether the governor is flexible on that point, if the, you know, on that decision, and could you just give us a little bit of the pros and cons right there?
Oh, and are we on? For the, wait for the reporter.
We might are be we? Back on here.
This is
thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you may recall the governor proposed initially in November when we first made this proposal was to take the money out of the potential reserve that was going to go into the reserves in December. Into the reserve, which now is about $1.9 billion. So the governor proposed using that money at that time, and later at the request of the speaker, changed it to be taken out of the Health Care Access Fund. And I think, you know, in just talking with the governor, we want to work with the legislature on this relief, and I think we can talk about the best way to fund this mechanism going forward. So, yes, flexible.
Thank you. Term.
Other questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and given the situation here with the lighting and microphone, I will ask a question, make a statement, and then let you have the opportunity to respond if that works, Mr. Chair. So what my question will be is really about this data system. The plan that we have before us, Representative Hoppe's bill, in comparison to the governor's plan. So we believe that this is an emergency and that checks should get out immediately to those that are in need of it. Can you tell me what the timeline would be for issuing checks if we pass the governor's proposal versus the timeline for the relief under the GOP plan? And then the question is, do you believe that the $20 million that it would take to build this system, that the department really should have access to all of this data? Do we typically get access? I believe the answer is no. that we don't and that we shouldn't. So those are my questions, if you can answer them after. But
it appears we have the microphone. Wait.
Okay, we've got to keep working with the portable system for a little bit longer. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, first of all, with respect to the timeline, we believe that, and every day makes a difference, that, in fact, this January 15th is a difference because every billing cycle we miss is another potential lost month. But it's our understanding that if we were to pass this law, that within 2 to 3 months, the invoice system could be up and running in the sense that the invoices could reflect the rebate on the invoice and the people would get it at that time. They could also then program in so that they would get credit for this first 2 or 3 months that they've already paid for the rebate. Under the House File 1, we're really concerned. We're not convinced we can get checks out in 2017. We believe the first we might be able to get checks out the door would be 2018 under that system. And the $20 million, that we're working on the fiscal note. It's not done. It's my fault. I'll take the full blame for that because this is a complicated process. We believe it'll be at least $20 million, and I'll know in another day or so how close that guess is, but it is kind of a guess. On the data systems and the data, we don't want the data. We don't typically have that kind of data on individuals like this. We would prefer not to have that data, and so we would ask the another reason we would ask not to engage in this, creating this new system, is because of all the data sets that then become part of our data set at MMB, and we'd prefer not to have that, obviously.
Okay, I'm informed by staff that the regular microphone system has now been hooked back into the regular recording device. So we're in a couple minutes. Okay. I guess I didn't quite get it. But anyway, we can continue on this way. Representative Anderson. Yes.
And the recorder, both.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner France, I have real concern about the statements that you've made that this is going to cost the state $20 million. And I'll just give you some examples. Today in Commerce Committee, we had a director of the MCHA system who described how they had a program for individuals that would have given them a rebate, and it was based on income, and the individuals had to fill out this form and apply for it and get this rebate, and then MSHA actually sent out the checks. And when other members had asked the question of how many staff they had to do this task for, you know, roughly 35,000 people, they had a total FTE count of 3. And the turnaround time was, you know, a week, and they did this on a monthly basis. So I have real concerns when you are throwing out the number that it's going to cost the state $20 million to do something like this, when clearly MNCHA, who has been in existence since 1976, has been doing this with this income data, with a residency verification, and having all of these steps in place, everything that we actually have in this plan that Representative Hoppe has done, and they've been doing it glitch-free since 1976 as part of this program, or the time frame that they've had this in place. And so, and they didn't have any tax issues. Clearly, we didn't have any tax issues when we gave out the rebates in 1999, when we gave out the rebates in 2001. That's never been an issue with the IRS either. So, you know, I hope that when you're putting together the fiscal note, you take all of those things into consideration because, you know, we want to be able to have faith and confidence in the fiscal notes that they are legitimate. And, you know, I just have real concerns given that we have multiple examples of why this would not cost anywhere near $20 million. And I think you had said that it would have FTE of 100 people, and here we have MCHA doing it for 3 FTEs. But that's just a comment, not a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'll let Commissioner respond on it. But just remember, so you know what's going on. Apparently, we believe that the portable recording device will now pick us up talking on the microphone since these are live. It's not hooked in there. So. All right, now it is hooked in there. Okay. Well, so, all right, so now we're back in business. Is that right, Mr. Stone? Erica? Yeah, all right. Okay. All right. Sorry, members. It's a little unusual. And Representative Hillstrom, I see I got you back on the list. I'm sorry if you had a follow-up question I didn't see. I'll go right back to you as soon as I'm done with this. Commissioner, did you have a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Chair Anderson, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Insurance Program, MHINSA, did operate for a long time. But the program that you're referencing, actually I have a copy of the application in front of me. There were the people who have participated in this rebate program were already enrolled in MHINSA. This was a program based on a federal tax subsidy, so there was no tax benefit. There was no tax implication because it was a federal subsidy. It was a subsidy done entirely on paper. It was done one time, and it was done in 2013. One of the things that would happen was people would submit their applications in June, and they received one check in September, and there was no monthly check. So this was a special subsidy provided for a very small subset, and it was about 2,000 people that were part of that program. So, you know, we looked at that, and I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate your making sure we look at every program. If anybody else has other programs you think that might be helpful, we looked at that. We saw that paper program, the small number of people, and the fact that it was a federal subsidy just didn't really highlight the fact that it would be helpful to us. The other thing about the taxability of sales tax rebates back in Governor Ventura's days, those were rebates of sales taxes. If you pay sales taxes, are not deductible on your federal income tax return. And so when you rebate those, there's no federal tax implication. In this particular situation, we're not aware of any exception that would make this not be income because it's not part of a direct subsidy to the insurance plan on behalf of the insured. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So of course, the governor prefers the governor's plan. The data will get, or the subsidy will get out faster. I believe your testimony was that you don't know if you can get any checks out to the people before 2018. So is there anything in the proposal in House File 1 that you believe that will actually do anything to stabilize this market so that it's our understanding that the insurance market is destabilized at the moment and that there needs to be some stability? Do you believe there's anything in this proposal that will do anything to stabilize that market in 2017 so that we actually can get to reform for 2018?
Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I'll give you my opinion. Actually, Commissioner Rothman is here, and he's a better one to answer that question. But we believe that the stability of the market is for 2017 is dependent upon more people getting into the market, and that can only be, we think, could be more affected positively by a quick bill and a quick relief system. So we believe the governor's bill would do that. It's harder to see how this helps the individual market if it's delayed under the House File 1.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a statement then, and then I'll be done. Members, I will not be supporting House File 1. I've heard this bill in civil law where we raised issues with the data practices issue. I heard this bill in commerce where we actually talked about some of these other provisions that are in Article 2. I am particularly concerned with page 9, section 4. We heard testimony in the Commerce Committee that the providers are actually very concerned about the health maintenance language, I think that's what it was, and the reimbursement basically what they said is that it's going to shift the balance and narrow the network for immediate relief. They prefer immediate relief and that they're worried that the balance in this bill is shifted against the providers and more for the plans. And the second thing that I'm very concerned about that's in this proposal is it allows for these HMOs to become for-profit companies. Members, one of the challenges is that many of our entities have reserves. They have reserve plans, and one we heard there's about $1 billion in reserves. There's been no discussion about the tax implications, about if you allow that company to become a for-profit, whose money is it? Is it taxed? Is it not taxed? How is that distributed? What are the protections of the people who have actually paid for insurance that money is actually going to go for care for what they actually paid for? And then ultimately I heard that there was testimony in another committee that there would be tax implication for the person who receives the rebate if it's actually issued as a check. So I'm a no on this proposal. I think I think we could do immediate relief. I think that's the right thing to do. I think that's what Minnesotans want, and I think that this bill does not get us there. I wish that we would have better heard the bill in civil law. I made the motion on the floor to send those civil law data practices issues back to committee so I wouldn't have to raise that issue here. But ultimately, members, I think that this bill is not done and it won't get relief out as it intended.
Other questions for either the commissioner or Representative Hoppe? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is really to the proposal as a whole. And if you want me to wait until the end, I can do that.
We have an amendment that I think is going to be offered, Representative Murphy. Why don't we wait till that's done?
Okay.
If there are no other questions, we do have one other person who wished to testify. Ms. Twyla Brace, is she here? Okay, if you guys could make room for Ms. Brace, and if she could testify on some of the financial aspects of the bill.
We will, Mr. Chair. We were negotiating.
Negotiating, okay.
It went very well.
Good.
Pardon me, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Brace, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you for this opportunity to talk about the financial aspects of the bill. I do want to say that it has been difficult, this bill having come out just last Thursday with the idea perhaps of it being passed off the floor tomorrow. It has been very difficult to follow exactly what's happening with this bill, both for the public and for us, and so we do have written testimony just showing some of our concerns about that, about the speed of this bill, about the fact that the HF1 doesn't show that it has gone through all of these committees, and so the public's a little bit in the dark about what's happening with a lot of money at stake. So let me just say about the premium assistance program.
Ms. Brace, we'll pass out your written testimony then if that's what you're requesting on that.
Thank you.
Okay.
The premium assistance, so I have just three comments having to do with the money in the bill. This is the only time that I have had the opportunity to speak on the House side, but the premium assistance, when we looked at the way of the transfer of the data, the way of the, all the different agencies that are going to be involved, I guess the word that struck me was mini-minture. It looks like a complex and expensive IT system that has to be set up. Also concerned about the fact of the money and the direct deposits, the fact that if the potential is there for a direct deposit and then only afterwards going for a clawback, we don't really believe that the clawback is usually the money's been paid, it's gone somewhere else. And so our concern is that this could actually encourage fraud. The money could be wasted. And so I know that there is concern here for people with high premiums. The high premiums, though, come from really the state moving towards managed care for all. It comes from the bad policy of the Affordable Care Act, all of these things, and this doesn't necessarily address them. The second point is the HMOs and the move to allow for-profits. I guess our statement would be to have it a little bit stronger than that. We would prefer you take away the nonprofit designation of the managed care organizations. And yes, I believe that, I can't remember who, maybe it was Representative Murphy who talked about the fact of where does the money go because they're nonprofits. But the fact of the matter is one of the reasons we have a problem in this state now is because being nonprofit means they're tax exempt, and therefore they were able to squeeze out the competition. And here's what we're left with. And organizations, as Commissioner Rothman found out when Blue Cross decided to pull out and all the others were thinking as well, essentially the managed care organizations have the state over a barrel with little place to go. And so really bringing in more competition is the idea, not just allowing for-profits to come in, but actual catastrophic policies as well, which are truly affordable and true insurance. And the third concern is with the items in the bill, both the premium assistance, because there could be a delay in the Affordable Care Act. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. We're concerned that this sort of thing could become not just a one-time, but could be ongoing. And so every time a program comes in and we say that it's only one time, we have set a precedent, particularly if it's like a mini-minture and we set up the entire IT system for it, it will be much more easier for it to continue going on and on and on, and then we will have developed a program that the state will be paying for premium assistance for a long term. So we look long term, not just short term, in our testimony to you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, not to this testifier, but...
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, see, no questions to the testifier. Thank you, Ms. Brace.
Thank you.
And I'm not aware of any other... we didn't have anyone else contact us about testifying, so I'll go to Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to have some clarification because I heard things differently in the Commerce Committee, and I see that Ms. Breitinger is here. So hoping she would come down and talk a little bit about the MSHA program and the rebate program and how long that ran. It was my understanding it was more than a year that, compared to what Commissioner Franz had said, and I don't know if she can shed some light on how that worked and give us a little better details, if that's something as an option for us, given the experience that they've had, if that's something they'd be able to handle.
Ms. Breitinger, can you state your name for the record and give us your answer to that question?
Certainly. Chairman Knobloch, Jennifer Breitinger. I'm the outside retained counsel for MSHA. I've been their lobbyist since 1995. MSHA ran a premium subsidy program from 2004 through 2013. So that entire period of time, each year, they ran a low-income subsidy program. I am not the mechanics person. We have a writing carrier, and that is who I think helped with that program. That would be Medica. So they could probably better answer some questions, but I don't know that any of the operational people that work on the MSHA contract would be in the room. But we'd be happy to provide you some further detail. I know at board meetings, which I have attended that entire time period, we'd always have an update. It seemed to work well. I think we might have had a couple appeals that entire time about, again, what we called the low-income premium subsidy program.
Over 9 years.
Right. Yes, that is correct. Okay. And Representative Anderson, I believe that it was created because of some federal money, and that's how we were told to distribute it. So there was an application. I think it might have been at the time probably paper. I don't know that we ever moved to online. So, yeah, if I can answer any other questions. I mean, MSHA has a small office. But there is a lot of backup, or traditionally there has been a lot of backup with our writing carrier.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions for the author of the bill? All right. I'm sorry. We're working on, I guess we're working a little bit on the amendment. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The chair recognizes Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just talking with House Research about changing the funding source in the amendment, as I had asked Commissioner Franz about the governor's flexibility about where the funds were coming from, and taking his advice that the governor is flexible on this, and that the original source for the funding in the governor's bill was the budget reserve. I've asked House Research to just draft that up for me so that I could incorporate that into the amendment that I'm about to offer.
Okay.
So if the chair is okay with that while he works on that, I think it's probably pretty clear what we're doing here.
Okay. Well, why don't we have Representative Liebling moves the DE4 amendment. And then I guess when council's ready, we can incorporate that that change. Do you want to explain your amendment then, Representative Liebling?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the DE4 amendment is the same amendment that was offered in the Health and Human Services Reform Committee. And it is the governor's proposal that you've just heard about from Commissioner Franz. And it does draw the money from the Healthcare Access Fund, which is something that the Speaker had requested and was, in fact, in the original bill that the Speaker presented, the one that he was advocating for to be part of a special session, if you all recall. That bill drew the funding from the Healthcare Access Fund. But I have heard that a lot of the Republican members get heartburn from that particular, I think, Representative Dean, and so I, the governor certainly didn't, that wasn't his first preference anyway, so we will ask to change that back. The second part of the amendment, Article 2, is the transition of care coverage that is in House File 1. So the DFL members feel that that is indeed, it's important. It's just for the 2017 year that people who did lose their coverage and are having real access problems and need to continue to see a provider that they were already seeing. And we have also understood that this is something that the plans were amenable to. At least I haven't heard anything saying that that they don't want to do it or can't don't feel they can do it. So that's the amendment. It should be pretty familiar to people by now. The governor's plan that we talked about on the floor, that you just heard the Commissioner France talk about, because we feel that this really is urgent. As you've heard the commissioner say, if we don't actually get this help out to people soon, we're going to miss open enrollment on the end of this month. I mean, that's really a real problematic. I mean, this really should have happened 2 months ago because people have been making decisions about their coverage not knowing what they can afford. So for some people, it may, if they know they're going to get this rebate, or I shouldn't call it a rebate because it really isn't. It's really a discount for the people who are paying the premiums. If they know they're going to get a 25% discount, they may make a different decision about how much of a deductible they can afford and so on. So really, we don't have a minute to waste. We should have done this already. The urgency of the matter is why I am, you know, willing to go with a program that I frankly don't think is perfect. Because I would rather have it be something that is calibrated by people's incomes. I would like there to be more checks on it and so on. But the reality is that sometimes you need to do something right away. It's short term. And I believe the situation is so serious for this group of people that we really need to move on this. And that's why I'm offering this delete all amendment. The people who are really in trouble here with the high premiums, a lot of them are your constituents. They're farmers, they're small business people, people who pay with their own checkbook, and many of them are not wealthy. They just make a little too much to be eligible for the premium subsidies available through MNsure. So I think it's really important that we do what we can to keep those people insured in 2017 so that they don't instead opt for the penalty and just say, heck with it, I can't afford insurance, because that destabilizes the market further, something that we just can't let happen. So this is, it's for these constituents who need the help, but it's also for the market as a whole, so that it can continue to function in 2017. And then let's get this thing going. Let's pass it. Let's get it to the governor. Let's get it in motion. And then let's turn to doing some other kinds of changes, reforms for the 2018 market so that we can stabilize the market and continue to allow people to be able to buy insurance in Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move my motion. My amendment.
Representative Liebling moves the DE4 amendment. Mr. Sullivan, do you have the language she was referring to?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the language will change the funding source in the DE4 from the Healthcare Access Fund to the General Fund. And to do that requires a new section to transfer money from the budget reserve to the General Fund. So that would be on the DE4, page 3, after line 9, insert Section 5, transfer, $311,645,000 in fiscal year 2017 is transferred from the budget reserve account in Minnesota statutes, Section 16A.152, Subdivision 1A, to the general fund. After that transfer is made, the next change to the DE4 would be on page 3, line 11, delete healthcare access and insert general. On page 3 of the DE4, line 15, delete healthcare access and insert general. And then on page 3, line 19 of the DE4, delete 5 and insert 6, because the new section to perform the transfer is going to be section 5.
Okay, Representative Liebling, is that okay with you?
Yeah, that sounds fine, Mr. Chair, and also I would request a roll call on the amendment.
Okay, all right. The language that Mr. Sullivan stated is incorporated into the DE4 amendment, and there will be a roll call. Discussion to the Liebling amendment. Discussion, Representative Hoppe, the author of the bill.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. While we were waiting for power to resume, Representative Liebling and Representative Murphy and I were talking, and there is room, as I keep saying, this is a work in progress, and I think we have some things that we are going to be able to agree on and ultimately make this a better bill. And we do agree that there's a sense of urgency. And Representative Liebling, I do appreciate what you're trying to do and your willingness to change your amendment, but with all due respect, I would urge members to vote no right now, and I'd like to get this bill out of here and send it to the floor and then start making changes to it when we get to the point where we can get it to a conference committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion to the DE4 amendment? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will call the roll on the DE4 amendment.
Representative Knobloch?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Cornish?
No.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dean?
No.
Representative Dittmer?
No.
Representative Drazowski?
No.
Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Gunther?
No.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hausman? Representative Hillstrom?
Aye.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Farcourt?
Yes.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Norns?
No.
Representative Pulowski?
Yes.
Representative Poppy?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wagenis?
Yes.
There being 9 ayes and 17 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. I don't see any other amendments. Discussion to the bill. Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Before this committee convened in this room, we had a DFL caucus, and Representative Liebling and I and Representative Hillstrom spent some time talking with the committee about the bill, and I wish you could have seen it, the frustration and really the depth of questions that our members had about the provisions that are in House File 1, trying to understand why they're there and what they mean, because this is moving so quickly through the process. And I want to be like Charlie Brown, and I want to kick the football and believe I'm going to hit it, and it's going to go someplace. But I am doubtful about where we're headed, despite the good intention of the author of the bill and our conversation together over here a little while ago. And the Senate is moving in such a different direction. And I keep thinking about the 100,000 Minnesotans who have been waiting since October, when there was a press conference where the speaker said this is a crisis and he was ready to call for the governor's resignation if there wasn't a solution. And now we are in the midst of trying to work our way through a piece of legislation that doesn't really hold together. And I understand the interest in reform, but I remember when I was a first-termer and there was a flood, and I don't remember if I think it was in Representative David's district, although I don't think Representative David's was here that term. I think it was. I think he was there, but not here. It was Representative Shumper. And Representative Hausman, who's not here tonight, would talk about, you know, we have at some point have to start dealing with this underlying issues that are leading to these flooded parts of the state. And we should do that while we are trying to bring relief to the people who lost their homes in the flood. And the legislature over and over would reject that idea, instead say the people who are without their homes should get relief. We should figure that out first and do that immediately. And sometimes we would do it. There would be negotiation in front of it, and then we would come into a special session in one day, hear a bill through the appropriate committees, pass it through the floor, and help Minnesotans. So I understand the lack of trust among the members in this legislature, and we've had a hard bunch of months between calling special sessions and nothing happening, and Minnesotans are losing faith in us as well. But if we really wanted to get relief to people, and we really meant that, we would do it without going through this effort of reform. And when we heard this bill in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee, there were only a few people that came and testified, and they were expressing their concern and their opposition to some of the provisions. And we're not going to really give them any chance, not really, to air their concerns. And some of what is in this bill is not anything to do with the individual market, but it's wholesale change to the health insurance market here in Minnesota. And we want to try and do that in a week and a half. It is unprecedented from my perspective. And I want to believe that you're doing your very best, Representative Hoppe, to take this bill through this process quickly and get into a conference committee and negotiate. But we've seen now too many times where things go into a conference committee and then they die a slow death, or we don't really know what happens and there's a lot of finger-pointing at the end. We're capable of doing the reform that you want, and it's due more time than what we're giving it in this 1 week. It's due more time for Minnesotans to digest it. And we should sever the relief from the reform and give ourselves the time to do it. And you heard me say I am happy to do that work with you, and I know Representative Liebling is too, and I know our committees are ready to do it. And we'll squabble over it, and you have the votes to pass it. But Minnesotans, the 100,000 Minnesotans who are on the line right now, they are paying a stiff price for a lack of ability for us to deliver on basic relief for them. And I want to ask you, so here's my question, right? Can you bring to bear a negotiation with the Senate in a conference committee that yields a bill that the governor will sign, because he's sending us all sorts of signals that the stuff that is being offered, he's not willing to sign. And we don't have that much time, and Minnesotans are on the hook. So I know this is, you know, an unusual question, but we're in an unusual moment. Do you think you can bring to bear the forces to negotiate a bill that could get signed into law so we can get relief to the people of Minnesota?
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. I have said through this whole process that this is a work in progress. We want a bill that the governor will sign, and we want a bill that can pass the House and the Senate. I don't know that either one of these bills is that bill right now. So I hope that it's not going to be me, or not just me, but I hope the people on the conference committee and the people in our body and in the Senate, we can get together and come up with something and talk to the governor beforehand and make sure we come back out of conference committee with a bill that can pass the House, can pass the Senate, and the governor will sign, and we'll get people the relief they need. And whether it includes all of the reforms that we want right now or most of the reforms, some of the reforms, do the reforms later, whatever we can agree to as a body, we have to have a bill that comes out of conference that's going to be able to pass and the governor will sign. I'll try my best to get there.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, as I mentioned earlier, there was almost no time and very little testimony in the policy committee. This bill isn't being heard in Health and Human Services Finance. It should, but it's not. And so the conference committee is going to have the hard job of really vetting 10 people of this legislature, vetting significant changes not just to the individual market but to the health insurance market in Minnesota. So will the conference committee, will you make sure that the conference committee does public hearings with public testimony so that the rest of us who have a stake in the matter and Minnesotans and those who work in healthcare have a shot at saying what they think about it, what's not going to work with it, and can, you know, we, at some point, those who have more expertise than you or me have got to have a say in what's happening here. Can you make that commitment?
Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I do not have a shortage of people giving me advice. I welcome advice from everywhere. We've had all kinds of people come in. We are going to have a conference committee. I don't exactly know what the process will be. I don't know who's going to be on it. And, by the way, don't say it's going to be difficult because I want people to want to be on it. But we're going to have to come out of that conference committee with a good product. I'll take ideas from anywhere. You know, whatever the process is, I hope there is a mechanism for people coming in and telling us, you know, we don't always know when we pass bills in whatever subject area, we don't always know what the long-term implications might be. Let us know. We need to pass a bill quickly. We want to do some reform, and, you know, I keep saying it. It is a work in progress, but, yeah, please. I mean, we were talking earlier. There's a lot of smart people in this room. There are a lot of smart people out of this room that can have input. We'll take good ideas from anywhere.
And last, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The committees and the speaker made a point about this at the very beginning of the session, that this legislature was going to do its work in the committees, and this is a really important piece of legislation. It says a lot about this legislature and its intention to stick with its word. We are not doing the work of this piece of legislation in the committees. It is going to be done instead in a conference committee, 10 people, hopefully in the public, but it has been our practice in the last number of years that more of the work of conference committees is being done behind closed doors, not in the view of the public. So here we are at the very start of the session, and the speaker said this legislature, this caucus, our Republican caucus, is going to do the work in the committees, and we're departing on a major piece of the legislation from that very commitment. And I hope that you will share that with your leadership. I know the speaker's not here, but it is, I think, a very unfortunate start to the session. That we are not, you know, really doing the hard work of this legislation in the committees with the members who have committee jurisdiction and with the committee expertise, and instead we're going to send it to a group of 10, if we're lucky, who will do too much of their work behind closed doors, and Minnesotans will be shut out of that. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carpenter.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on a couple of things, and I wasn't initially going to talk about the conference committee process, but I get pretty nervous about this whole thing. And, you know, our goal should be, Representative Hoppe, to come up with a bill that's the best possible bill so that if it were to become law, we would be comfortable that we were doing some good things. And what makes me nervous, for example, a few moments ago you said we would come up with something. Well, I think we should know what that something is or have a pretty good idea when it leaves the Minnesota House, because as Representative Murphy pointed out, there will be 10 people that will be making the decision, and I would only footnote her comment with reminding everybody, as we all know because this is a relatively senior committee, is that comes back with a vote up or down. So if we haven't had any input, then it's take it or leave it. That's the situation that we would be in. And, you know, that's the way a conference committee report, in a sense, always comes back. It can't be amended other than rejecting the report. But in this case, we have really no idea what that coming up with something, Representative Hoppe, may in fact mean in the end. So that's why I get particularly nervous. But the other thing I'd like to comment on, there's been references to administrative costs could be as much as $20 million. Now, we've got here some fiscal information. It's basically the numbers that are in the bill. But there's an admission that this bill is going to be quite costly in the sense that they can expend up to $9 million, 3% or up to $9 million for administrative costs. But my question, Representative Hoppe, because we do not have a fiscal note. That's, I think, a huge problem with a bill that's spending $300 million. How the balance of the costs, if it were to go above $9 million, if the number at $20 million or $15 million or whatever it is, are the agencies expected to just take that out of Hyde, or just how do you expect that any shortfall in that up to $9 million would be handled?
Representative,
then I have another question or comment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I'm not trying to not answer the question, but we'll work this out with the administration. We're willing to keep working on this. My expectation is that it's not going to cost that much money, and I would be very surprised if it does. And, you know, we don't have a fiscal note yet, and Commissioner Franz is going to get it, and he said it was his fault. It's probably my fault because it's a complicated bill that they're having to come up with a fiscal note for, but we'll figure that out. That will be something we'll have an answer for. My inclination on this is we're going to have a cap on this number, and if the money that we're spending on administrative services or the money that we're going to give back to people, help with the premium relief, if that money runs out in October or November, I can't imagine coming to this legislature and trying to get more. We need to make sure that this is a one-time, one-off solution, that we cap the money, and we need to have reforms. We need to have reforms so that we don't have this problem in 2018 or on into the future.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson,
I this is about the first time that I can remember, at least in recent years, that we've ever had a bill of this magnitude with these kinds of policy questions. And we are a fiscal committee. We are the last stop before it hits the House floor. And to put a bill out like this without even a spreadsheet, which is what we do with the major appropriations bills that come through, or when it's other legislation, a fiscal note. And I would say that this is under the other legislation category, and there should be a fiscal note and or perhaps a spreadsheet. And I think we're being negligent as a committee when we don't have a fiscal note and we don't know on what road we're on. And it keeps going back to, well, we're going to work it out. We'll be talking about these issues in the future. And I'm not laying blame on the fiscal note. This bill was introduced first, our second day of legislative session, so roughly a week ago. And I understand that in that fiscal note there's going to be input from as many as seven state agencies. So it is a complicated process, and so I'm not going to fault anybody for not having the fiscal note ready, but I will fault the committee for moving forward with a bill like this, $300 million, and not having a fiscal note this early in the legislative session. I think we can be expedient in terms of time, but we could do the correct things and at least know what the cost is going to be. I understand that there was some hope that there may be a fiscal note later this week. I don't know if that's, in fact, going to happen, but we're going to be voting on it here tonight, and we should have that information before us. And, Mr. Chairman, when I was in your role there, I held bills up that didn't have a fiscal note, and you can check with the nonpartisan staff on that. And one of them was the Health and Human Services, because I simply knew that it was complicated. And I would sometimes schedule that near the end of the session with the omnibus bill, simply because it was important with a massive bill like that to have the numbers. And that's my point here. We simply don't have the numbers. And there's not really an answer other than the author saying that he hopes or that he thinks it's going to come in at a lower number in terms of the administrative cost. That's wishful thinking. But that's the purpose of a fiscal note, so that we would know that to be a fact. And even the fiscal notes are not always 100%. But when we're talking about a range here from 9 million to 20 million, that's a pretty big number to not have the basic information, the number of FTEs that would be needed. And by the way, the testimony a little earlier, and I'll just make a final comment on that, didn't really answer one key question. And Commissioner Franz pointed out that the program that was able to turn it around so rapidly was about 2,000 people in the program. And here we're talking on into the hundreds of thousands. So just a totally different ballpark in terms of turning all that around. But, Mr. Chairman, I will stop there. And like my colleague here, Representative Hillstrom, with the lack of information we have and the lack of public input, I'll be voting no.
And, members, I do have Representative Detmer and Fabian on the list, and I know Representative Hoppe wants to comment, but since I was referenced, and I guess maybe in response to your comment too, Representative Murphy, I do want to say, first of all, there is a spreadsheet in the packet. It's not very detailed because there aren't a whole lot of appropriation numbers in it, but there is a spreadsheet in there. And, you know, this is, I think, we would certainly like to be spending more time on this, but on the other hand, we have tens of thousands of people who are hurting, who are in a situation that with open enrollment, I believe, ending January 31st, we need to get something done quickly or we're not going to be able to help those people. And so it's sort of a, in my view, a trade-off between moving things along as quickly as we reasonably can, and we didn't in the end suspend the rules last week and move it along even faster. But we're trying to help those people as quickly as we can and not take too much time, or we're not going to be able to help them. Well, at the same time, bringing it now through the committee process, taking testimony, taking questions, getting information. And yes, it's a large bill. It spends a lot of money on an important topic. And I would agree, Representative Carlson, it is unusual in my experience for us to be moving something like this quickly. But it's also an unusual situation. And we have tens of thousands of people that are hurting, and I think we need to move it along.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a comment. I thought I was clear in my comments that I think the one thing that there's total agreement on is that we want to move this bill out as soon as possible. But a fiscal note, I hear that you might have the bill up next Thursday. I don't know if that's accurate. It's hearsay. I don't know if that's the day you're planning on taking it up on the House floor or not. We have a holiday on Monday, but we've got Tuesday and Wednesday. If, in fact, a fiscal note were done later this week, where this committee could have met on Tuesday or Wednesday and had the information that I'm talking about before us and still met your timeline, which, if it is, in fact, Thursday. If it's earlier than Thursday,
Well, you know how leadership timelines are, Representative Carlson. They change. Who knows exactly what they are? But
I
guess
I'll ask you a question.
But there'll be, you know, if we get a fiscal note, that'll have additional information that can be considered in the discussion on the floor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we all know it's much more difficult to respond to a complex bill like this when you get a brand new fiscal note on the House floor. And basically, the numbers here are just what's in the bill.
That's right. No,
that's not anything that's really telling us the number of FTEs or any of the other information that typically would go into a fiscal note.
Well, that's true, but you referenced the fact that there wasn't a spreadsheet, and I wanted to make it clear that there was one. It's just that because of the nature of the bill, it's not a very complicated spreadsheet.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we all know that a spreadsheet is a little different than this if you had a formal spreadsheet. I mean, I won't argue that point, but it's...
Well, they have lines in them maybe, but it shows how much money is being spent in each of the different areas. But anyway, if we wait until next week, you know, then we run into needing to suspend the rules and then... being in a situation where we act on the bill then perhaps the following week. And again, we want to be able to have a conference committee that also looks at the ideas that are brought forth by the Senate and puts together the best possible bill. And just, you know, it is an unfortunate situation. I wish we had more time to consider it too. But we do want to get relief out to these people. We want to deal with this crisis that's upon us. We have a very limited amount of time in order to do that, and so we're trying to move this along as expeditiously as we can while still taking testimony, having hearings, answering questions, and there will certainly be plenty of more opportunity for that, too.
Well, Mr. Chair, just very quickly, I asked a question, and I'm not sure you said something, but I didn't hear an answer. When next week will this bill be on the House floor? Do you know?
I'm not sure if I have a definite answer on that. I think, you know, if we pass it today, I would guess that given we have a Monday holiday and thinking about floor schedules next week, that Thursday would be, you know, as good a guess as any.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that's my point, that we could have acted next week and still met your Thursday floor time. But I'll stop there.
Okay. We'll see what the schedule is for next week. I have Representative Detmer and Fabian. Did you want to make a comment, Representative Hoppe? Okay, Representative Detmer, Fabian, then Liebling. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I've been sitting here listening to the conversation just like I did back in 2013. It takes me back to 2013. I think, Representative Carlson, you were the chair of the committee at that time. And I'm listening to Representative Joe Atkins, and Representative Atkins is no longer with us. And I remember listening to what was going on in the committee, and we're trying to make some amendments on our side. We're trying to make some amendments to the bill and so forth. And I raised my hand, and the chair recognized me, and I had three questions for Representative Atkins. And at that time, the DFL had control of the House, the Senate, and the governorship. And my first question was to Representative Atkins. I said, will your bill lower the cost of health premiums in Minnesota? And his answer was, Representative Detmer, no, it won't. My second question, will your bill improve the health insurance coverage in Minnesota? And his answer was, Representative Detmer, no, it won't. My third question was, well, Representative Atkins, why are we doing this? I mean, we have 94% of the people in Minnesota are covered with insurance, and we have programs for those that are not. And his answer was, well, Representative Detmer, if we don't do it, the federal government will. So here we sit 4 years later with a failed health insurance system in our state of Minnesota, and like all of us, we have constituents that are sitting there wondering what we're going to do. I have constituents that have $20,000 deductibles, $2,000 premiums. They don't know what they're going to do. And we're sitting here, and I have confidence in Representative Hoppe, and I have confidence in the people that will be on that conference committee. I have confidence that we're going to do something to help the people of Minnesota. And then we can start looking at long-term solutions for what we don't have now in Minnesota. So those are just my comments. And by the way, I think we spent about $400 million on the exchange. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an interesting discussion. I didn't really plan to say much, but I've been making some notes here. Representative Murphy tried to make a comparison to the floods in southeast Minnesota and what's going on here and the actions that the legislature should take. I've lived through the flood in Roseau in 2002. Representative Murphy referred to people being without their homes. Myself and many of my friends living in Roseau were without our homes. In this case, people are not just without their home. They are without their home. And it's their hometown hospital, their hometown clinics. And on top of that, they're paying premiums that are through the roof. The disaster that we're facing here in healthcare in Minnesota is different from the disaster of a flood. The flood was a natural disaster. This was a man-made disaster called Minsure and Obamacare. And with all due respect to people who thought that they were trying to make things better, they've made it worse. They've made it so that people that live in Wool Road, Minnesota, will be traveling 95 miles. They will pass three clinics and one hospital to get primary care. There will be young mothers who have had a baby in Roseau Hospital before, who trust their doctors, who are not going to be able to have that doctor anymore. You like your plan, you get to keep it. You like your doctors, you get to keep them. Folks, this is a mess. A natural disaster creates messes. And we have to clean up the mess. We are now in the position that we have to clean up a mess that's been created by man. And it's incumbent upon us to take some action here to get this process moving. And not only is it affecting just our clinics and our hospitals, it's affecting our families, and it's affecting our small-town pharmacies, Matson's Pharmacy in Roseau, and Greenbush Pharmacy, and Heritage Pharmacy in Warroad. Our local people are not going to be able to use those anymore who are on individual plans. What the Department of Health has done with their granting of a waiver to Blue Cross in this situation in my district is unconscionable. Yes, this is an unfortunate way to start this session, as has been said before. We shouldn't have been here. This should have been done differently. And people are nervous about the whole thing. Yeah, and they should be. This is about priorities. When we had the flood in Roseau, we knew 2 days before the flood that the flood was coming. We've known for years that this flood was coming. In Roseau, when the flood came, we established three priorities. We had people that walked away from their homes and lost them to put sandbags around our sewage treatment plant. The school in Polaris. We need to put some sandbags around access, affordability, and continuation of care. And to just look at premiums, it's not going to sandbag access and continuation of care. I'll be voting for the Hoppe bill, and I'll be voting no on the Liebling amendment. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wasn't going to, you know, we've gotten kind of pulled off into other territory here, and this is not what I intended to talk about initially when I raised my hand, but I do want to make a couple of responses. And, you know, I think Representative Fabian, when you think about the disaster that struck your hometown and all that, I understand your emotion there, and, you know, we can all hear that emotion in your voice, and, you know, I'm sure that's a painful memory. But, you know, what we're talking about here, first of all, I just want to say that in spite of the fact that people still like to confuse the fact that we're talking here about the individual insurance market, we're not talking about MinSure. MinSure is not the individual insurance market. MinSure is a marketplace. And in fact, even though it had a very rough start, it would have been nice if we could have started working on MinSure a couple years before we did. In fact, the exchange is really working pretty well right now. Over 100,000 people have used it for this open enrollment period. In fact, I think it's like up to 110,000 or something like that, very successfully. So, you know, let's not confuse people. I know people like to talk about MinSure as being a disaster and all that. It is not a disaster. MinSure is working pretty well now. Does it need improvements? Yes, it does. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it has certainly made a lot of improvement. The other thing is, you know, there is nothing that the ACA did that is cutting off access to people in rural Minnesota. I think what, we, you know, you have to recognize that what we have is a system of insurance where insurers are controlling their costs by narrowing their networks. This is a feature of the insurance system. And it's a very unfortunate feature, I grant you that. I think we need to work on it. We should all work on it together. But, you know, if we are just going to continue the Obamacare bashing, we're not going to get very far. We're going to just waste a lot of time. This is, you know, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has done a ton of good in this state, tons of good. Now, maybe not everything is, you know, to everybody's liking, and we certainly all recognize right now that there are people who are really concerned about these very high premiums. That's what we've been talking about. But we have covered many, many more people with insurance in this state. The Affordable Care Act has brought billions of dollars to Minnesota, which has kept rural hospitals going. We heard, if you went to the One Minnesota conference, you heard from a guy, I didn't know him, but he was from a rural Minnesota clinic, and he talked about how the Affordable Care Act brought dollars into his clinic. I mean, the Affordable Care Act folks is helping our healthcare system in this state and our entire economy, because we have a very healthcare infused economy in Minnesota. And so we'll see. You know, I really hope that our now Republican Congress smartens up and doesn't just pull the ACA out from under this country, because we will see what will happen in this state, because billions of dollars will go away. And then we will see it will be a disaster in this state. So I'm sure there are things you don't like about the ACA. There are things I don't like about it. It wasn't my preferred solution, but it's what we had, and the people here that were here when that came in and that we were in charge, we had to do what the federal government told us that we had to do, and we had to make choices, and we made those choices the best we could. And they benefited. Many of those choices benefited many, many thousands of Minnesotans and still do today. But the thing I actually raised my hand to say is that there was a lot of discussion here about the urgency of the matter. But the urgency is not just the urgency of moving the bill through committee, because at the end of the day, the bill you guys are moving is not going to work to get the immediate relief to people. That is the real problem here. Great. Make a big show of it. How fast you can move a bill. You know, how fast you can move a bill is not a measure of actually doing good work that immediately benefits the people who need it. And I just want to make that distinction. You know, moving a bill really, really fast, just, you know, you do not have to connect the changes you want to make in the insurance system with this immediate discount for Minnesotans who need it. Those two things do not have to be connected in one bill. We have time to think about reforms we can make to the market for 2018. We have time to make sure that we're making reforms that are going to further stabilize the market instead of destabilizing it. I'm afraid that if by some magic we were able to just pass House File 1 and get it signed into law, I don't know that any of us know what the effect on the market would be. So, I think you all should, you know, probably you're very lucky that Governor Dayton is not going to just sign this into law, and that we're going to be, you know, forced to take a harder look at all of these things. I only wish, like Representative Murphy, I wish we could do it more in public, where more of us and our constituents can be involved. Once you get it to conference committee, that is not an equivalent process. It cuts out most of the members, and therefore it cuts out most of the members' constituents. So when your constituents are calling you and saying, you know, here's a change I want to make to this bill that's in conference committee, well, good luck, you know. Or when they say, I want you to tweak this when it gets to the House floor, you're going to have to say, well, I'm sorry, I get an up or down vote. But there is real urgency here, Mr. Chair, this urgency about getting help to Minnesotans who need it, not urgency about, you know, showing how fast we can move a bill. But we need to pass a bill that will actually work to get the quickest help to Minnesotans who need it. So, thank you.
Representative Murphy, then Davids. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I will just say again that when we agree that Minnesotans are facing a crisis, and it seems like most Minnesotans, at least the ones elected, agree on that, whether it is because their premium rates have increased in a way that no one anticipated because of the insurance company policies, or if it is because of a natural disaster like a flood, that we should work together to get them relief. And that's why I'm objecting to where we are right now, whether it's flood relief or premium relief, or it's relief after a tornado. We should set aside the other policy matters and get them immediate relief. And I am disappointed that this legislature and the Republican majority is unwilling to do that, especially because when I look at the bill that we're looking at right now, most of the provisions in here are not going to do very much for the individual market. And they're not going to solve the network problem that Representative Fabian is speaking to.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I cannot believe what I'm hearing from my backside. It's just amazing. Obamacare and MedSure have been the biggest failures of all time. Democrats promised we'd have 450,000 people enrolled by the end of 2016. They missed the mark by over 80%. And that's success? Not where I come from. If MedSure works so well, why do we have 16,000 life events that are behind? A preemie baby is born, goes in the NICS unit, and can't get on the policy. Can't get on the policy. That's working well. Why does the Office of the Legislative Auditor say MedSure costs taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars every year in fraud and abuse? Why did people have to wait 3 months to do their tax returns because MedSure couldn't get out the 1095As? If it works so well, why do people get hung up on after they've been on hold for 3 hours? This is unbelievable what's being said here. MedSure is a total and complete disaster. Obamacare has ruined the best health care system in the world, and I hear people on my backside saying that things are good, and it's a success, and it's working better. Why don't you ask Charlie Dunker how well MedSure worked for him? I live in Fillmore County. I represent Fillmore and Houston counties. We have zero all-access plans, zero. I have people calling me up in tears, men and women in tears, $4,400 a month premium, ask me, do we sell the farm or do we liquidate our IRAs? I have people liquidating their IRAs today to pay for health insurance premiums that I control. And this is working? If you live in Preston and you go to Olmsted Medical Center, if you live in Spring Valley or Chatfield, Olmsted Medical Center, that's where your doctor is that you've treated with all your life. Because of Blue Plus, an HMO, you have lost your doctor, you have lost your clinic, you have lost your hospital, so please don't tell me that Obamacare and MedSure are working well. This is the biggest disaster in Minnesota history. There's no other way to look at it. So please, members, this is so bad. I'm a co-chair of the Legislative Oversight Committee on MedSure, and no matter how bad anybody in this room thinks it is, it's actually a lot worse. It kind of reminds me of the movie The Sixth Sense with Bruce Willis. It's dead. It just doesn't know it yet. It's over. It's done. Knock off the rhetoric about how good this is because people are laughing at you outside this room that have gone through this misery. In November and December, all my Blue Cross clients lost their policy. I had to go in and tell them what their premium was and what their deductible was. $4,400 a month with a $13,100 deductible. That is not a good plan. That is not a plan that's working. So members, vote yes on this bill. Get it out of here so we can talk about this. And about all this daylight and sunshine and committee process, don't give me that. I've been around here long enough to see what the other side does on those issues. So let's not go there. Let's vote this bill out and go have some pizza.
The author of the bill, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's been an unusual evening. The power went out. We've had a very spirited discussion on both sides of the aisle. It's been an unusual committee hearing. It's an unusual circumstance. It's an unusual bill. People tell me I'm an unusual legislator. Thought that'd be funnier. Thank you. Representative Carlson, I want to apologize. There isn't the fiscal note, and when Commissioner Franz was up here, he took the blame for it, and it's not his fault. It's my fault, if anybody's, because we're operating under a pretty short time frame. It's really an unusual circumstance, and I apologize for it. We're going to get that information. We're not going to bring a bill back out of conference. It doesn't have that information for you and for all of the members. You're absolutely right. The Speaker and the Governor and the Senate Majority Leader, and I think all the leaders of the caucuses, I think all of us know that there's a sense of urgency. I've never seen anything like this. It's unusual. We got to try to come up with a solution. Speaking of fiscal notes, our fiscal staff do an amazing job for us. And this is I don't know if this is the worst fiscal note they've ever seen, but it certainly has a lot of moving pieces in it, and there's a lot of things that are really kind of conjecture. There's no way to know, really. I mean, this is going to be a best guess. And I understand why it takes a long time for them to do that part of it. Our staff, our nonpartisan staff, Elizabeth Randall over here, I don't think Laurie is here, They put in a ton of work. The staff at the table here have put in a lot of work on this. This is an unusual year. I've never had this happen before, but our ceremonial first day, I had Minshew meetings that morning. I had Minshew meetings that afternoon after we got sworn in. The speaker and the majority leader, you know, their first day, their ceremonial first day with their families here, they went and got the governor out of the reception where he was meeting with new legislators and their families to go talk about this. I left at, I don't know, probably 9 o'clock that night on our ceremonial first day. And when I left, John and Holly and Brian and Chelsea were all still here. It's an unusual year. We have a sense of urgency. We need to get this done. Let's send it to conference. We can't bring a bill back without your help. We can't bring a bill back that we can't pass out of the House. I appreciate your time. This was a great discussion. I appreciate your green vote. Thank you, members.
This time the chair will renew his motion that House File 1 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails. House File 1 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, and members, we don't have our regular standing meeting this Monday because of the Martin Luther King holiday. So unless there is some sort of special meeting before, then I would anticipate we'd be meeting on Monday, the 23rd of January. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.